Hey, my friend, Deb Boulanger here, and I'm super excited to share this new episode of Life After Corporate with you. And before we dive into this powerful interview with Megan Huber about the power of group programs and how to add groups to your portfolio of service offerings, I gotta apologize to you. I screwed up on this episode, and it rarely happens, and I'm so upset about it that I am recording this new intro for you here. My microphone settings were not correct, and I sound like I'm in a well. And I am enough of a perfectionist to make that upset me just a little. And although the engineers did their best to correct the sound, they weren't able to get it perfect. And I don't want to hold back. I don't want to hold back on this training and this interview with Megan, because you're going to get so much out of it. And she's so smart. So please listen in. I apologize for the disruption in your ears, but take away everything you can. You're going to want to take notes on how to make group programs engaging, insightful, and how to create a community that adds to the experience that your clients receive in your program. So with that, let's dive in. Welcome to Life After Corporate, your ultimate guide for making the leap from corporate leader to entrepreneur. I'm Deb Boulanger, entrepreneur, executive leader, and founder of the Launch Lab for Women Entrepreneurs. This is your time to break through the glass ceiling once and for all and get your ticket to the C-suite. Come back each week to get the leading strategies, advice, and tools that will give you the skills and confidence you need to replace your corporate paycheck. Are you ready? Let's go. Welcome to another episode of Life After Corporate, my friend. And if you're new to our show, welcome home. This is where you get the straight scoop on what it really takes to build a successful business as a coach or consultant or expert in your industry. And today we're talking about how to simplify your business, generate more revenue, and have more free time by building leverage into your business with group programs. And today we're speaking with Megan Huber, who's an expert in helping coaches, consultants, and other experts deliver their expertise, that's a lot of experts in there, through group programs that provide exceptional experiences for their clients. Megan also hosts the Built to Last podcast and the Tribe of Legends Facebook group. Welcome to Life After Corporate, Megan Huber.
Thanks for having me. I'm excited to dive into this incredible conversation we're going to have.
I think it's so important. You know, leverage is something that you need to build into your business if you're to effectively grow and scale. And I love your position of, when I've listened to the Built to Last podcast, about how you help your clients establish their priorities. Like we are spouses, we're family members, we're community activators, where we have much fuller lives than just work, and how you focus on making things simple. So I'm excited for this conversation too.
Awesome.
So tell us, do you have a Life After Corporate story?
Yeah. So I was a teacher in my 20s. That was my very first career. I didn't ever intend on being a teacher, although I grew up in a household with an educator. My mom was a teacher and a high school principal. Actually, she was an elementary school principal, a high school teacher for 34 years. And I basically grew up in a classroom. I grew up in a school. I remember being in a schoolhouse all the time, but that is not what I went to college for. I thought I was going to work in business. And when I was in college, I worked at a resort on the beach, and I truly thought I was going to go into hospitality management. I thought I was going to work in resorts. And I even remember applying for so many entry-level hospitality management positions. And I'll never forget, I worked in a restaurant in the resort, and the food and beverage manager, it was my senior year, said to me, if you want to have a life and you ever intend on getting married and you want to be a mom, don't go into this industry. Oh, okay. I was 20, 21 at the time. And the food and beverage director and the food and beverage manager, they both were parents. They had both been married. They had both gone through divorces. And they were there from 10 or 11 in the morning, but they were the last ones to leave. And they would leave at 12 at night, 1 o'clock in the morning, 6 days a week, sometimes seven. And they were like, get ready to work 80 to 100 hours a week. And I was like, okay, I don't think that's the direction I'm going to go in. So when I graduated college, I didn't know what I wanted to do because I had heard that message as a young person. And then I just sort of equated that to, well, anything I choose to do in that particular direction with that degree I have, if I want to have a life, it's not going to work. And so over the summer after I graduated, my mom said to me, she goes, because I was really flailing. You know, I was 21, but she goes, Megan, you would be such an amazing teacher. I'll pay for you to go get your degree. Like, just go, let's get you in school again. Mind you, I had just graduated. Go get your master's degree. And I was like, okay. Like, I didn't know what else to do.
Yeah.
But I knew teaching and I knew the school and I knew public education because of how I had grown up. And my mom was an amazing teacher. She got lots of Teacher of the Year awards. I ended up teaching at the high school I graduated from in the same department as my mom. Get this, our classrooms were beside each other.
Oh my God, that's so funny.
It's a very interesting story. And I had a great mentor in her. She truly was an incredible educator. And that's really where I learned how to work with people and a diverse group of people and how to manage a classroom. So that was my first career. And I wasn't just the teacher that got there when the bell rang and left when the bell rang in the afternoon. I worked about an 80-hour week. I said yes to anything and everything my principal would ask me to be the leader of and filled my time up with working. And that truly was my identity, to work, to accomplish, and to do an amazing job at everything I was doing. And when Sean and I, my husband, had our daughter Brighton almost 12 years ago in 2010, I decided not to go back to the classroom. So I left, which was a very interesting experience for me because you go from what I just described and that type of routine for many years to you're at home essentially by yourself without another adult you can talk to, doing something that you have never done before. And it's literally as if your entire identity has been stripped away from you. So that was my career. And then that's what sort of, when I came home, that's what led me down the path of entrepreneurship.
It's so interesting. We didn't know this before we recorded this episode, but I started my career in teaching and a little different path to getting there, but I didn't know what to do. I didn't know what to go to school for. I didn't have a passion. I was a really good babysitter and I was in demand in the neighborhood because I had younger siblings and I knew how to arrange activities and take care of kids. So I went into education and actually worked in education for 4 years, but then was never really, well, first of all, I was in special ed and I was working for a cooperative. So let's just paint the picture. I'm making $11,200 a year and waitressing 4 nights a week to pay my rent. So it wasn't like the financial benefit was super strong. And then it was this time when technology was emerging and we were bringing new technology into offices, email and computer. So I'm a little bit older than you are, Megan. I kind of was not a digital native. I am a digital immigrant for sure. But I was attracted by that and I wanted to go into business. So that's when I made the leap and got a job working for a consultant who was in the tech space and then ended up spending like 20 years there.
Yeah.
Before making the leap. But the thing we share is a passion for education and teaching. And now we're entrepreneurs. And what I love about these stories is that everything about who you are and all the experiences that you've had come into play with what you're doing right now. So tell us about what led you into helping people create group programs. And did you first create your own group program?
Yeah, that's a great question. You know, I'll start by sharing, how did I even get into coaching? You know, where did that come from? My husband at the time, this was again like 11 years ago, 10 years ago, he was a personal trainer. And he was working and I was at home and I was already dabbling in like trying to figure something out. So I did start when Brighton was about 3 months old, I just started going to networking events because I was like, I need to figure this out. I'm going to go.
I need some adult conversations.
I need adult conversations. And I wanted to build certain skill sets. I knew that if I was going to figure out some sort of business, there were skills I didn't have There was knowledge that I didn't have that I knew I needed to equip myself with. Plus, the other thing that I experienced that I think a lot of women experience, whether they are leaving corporate or they're leaving their job to become a mom, it was like my confidence like just dissipated. It was like it went out the window. And I thought, if I ever have to make money again, which I knew I would, I wanted to, I am going to have to go be a checkout person at Harris Teeter. It was like, where did that confidence go? And it was such a loss of identity for me. And so I was going through that as a new mom, going to these networking events, not quite sure what business I was going to run. And my husband said, so he also had a coaching certification, Sean did. And he already knew that world. And he goes, how about this? I think you should sign up for this coaching certification program, and I'm going to do it too. And he had already done it with the same instructor and already had the certification. And it was a pretty intense certification. It wasn't one of those really simple, easy 6-week self-study ones. It was very intense. It had an intense practicum. And I realized, holy cow, what I'm learning, I was already doing unconsciously with my high school students. Because when you're working with high school kids, there's so much that you've got to understand about their emotions and what they're going through. Meanwhile, you also have a classroom of kids where I was teaching an elective. So I had freshmen through seniors all in the same class. I had F students up to A students. I had kids that had been homeschooled and they were the first time in a classroom. I had kids that had all sorts of labels that the school system puts on people, IEPs, you name it, all in one class. You can't just be a teacher and have a classroom of successful students when that's the makeup of your classroom. And so I realized, wow, I was also a tennis coach. I was a women's tennis coach. And so I realized, wow, coaching really does uses a lot of the skill sets that I have. And I didn't even know that I had them because I wasn't labeling it as coaching. And so that's what got me started. And like most coaches, I started out with one-on-one coaching. And then I did start shifting to, I was actually running in-person groups back in 2012. And I was charging $97 a month, 2 in-person meetings a month. And I had 10 people in that group. So I was making like next to nothing. And so, yeah, I was dabbling in groups back then. And then I got to a point where I was finally making 5 figures a month as a coach, which it took me about 1.5 to 2 years to even get to that point.
Yeah, that's the holy grail your first year or two, right?
Yeah. And so my pathway is unique from a lot of people in this industry in that I found a mentor who I had never worked with before. I had never taken any of her programs. In fact, I did not even know who she was. Somehow she stumbled upon me, or I stumbled upon her. And she was marketing for this apprenticeship program, no money exchange. And I thought, this is exactly what I'm looking for. Because I knew back then, I knew what my vision was for my own coaching business. I knew I wanted to have a multi-million dollar business. I knew I wanted to be running groups. I knew I wanted to use my skill set from teaching and running classrooms. But I wanted to know the behind the scenes. I was like seeking, like, what does it actually look like behind the scenes? I don't just want to be coached. I want to see it back there. And so I thought, this is it. And I applied for that, not knowing who she was, got it, helped her build her big, huge, year-long flagship group program / certification, helped her launch it. We had a $1.7 million launch.
Wow.
And she needed a team to run the actual program. And she offered me a job. And I took the job. And I left my own business. This was in the end of 2013. And I stayed with her until the end of 2016. And my role was, I was literally creating all the curriculum, running the big group coaching programs. And we didn't just have one a year. We would have higher level masterminds. And we would have an online version. So there was a time when I was running and facilitating 4 very large scale group programs and masterminds at a time. So, you know, the most interesting part of that experience was actually watching the clients go through the program, because we had about 1,000+ clients go through those programs in the course of 3.5 years. And you get to see what works and you get to see what doesn't work.
How did that inform what you're doing now?
You know, adults are, there's a lot of similarities in running a high school classroom, or I think just being a teacher in general of any age child. I see a lot of similarities between the high school age and adults because they are closer in like cognitive development and cognitive ability at that point by the time the kid is 18 years old. But adults learn in a particular way. And what I recognized was that you start to pay attention to other group programs because the clients in the program are building their own group programs and you're hearing them complain about their clients not getting results. And I think what's kind of occurred in our industry with group programs, and it actually makes a lot of sense. It's that all of us are products, most at least like 99.9% of us, are products of public education. We all went through public education or private school, and it's not that much different. And adults or people mimic, we mimic everything. I mean, we mimic our parents when we're infants. So naturally, the way that we were taught in school for how many years, all the way up through college, even graduate school, it's all delivered in the exact same way for that many years. And it's information-based. It's a lot of information. It's come into the class, keep your mouth shut, sit in your desk. By the way, there's a seating arrangement. You got to sit in that seat. Do not talk. Do as I say. Here's all the information. Get a good grade on the end of grade test. I think college is even worse. It's even more boring. It's even more confusing. And it's just like your brain wants to explode after every single one of your classes. Naturally, a lot of the way that group programs are structured, formatted, and delivered, it is very much synonymous to how all of us experienced it as a student growing up. Natural, right? We're mimicking. However, that is not conducive to how an adult learns. So the biggest complaint that any of us, myself included, I've experienced this. The biggest complaint that any group program leader or facilitator has is I am so frustrated with my clients because they are either not showing up or not engaging, not taking action, i.e. not getting results. Now the coach and the facilitator is frustrated beyond belief. And then what happens is they start overcompensating. This is where all the overworking, over-delivering, over-customizing, you name it, people-pleasing, all the things. Then it cycles into beating the self up. I'm an imposter. I don't know what I'm doing. I shouldn't do this. I'm going to throw in the towel. I see it from people running million-dollar group programs. I see it with people who have four people in their group program. And what I've identified, one of the things, you know, it's like we can get pissed off at our clients all day long and we can blame them for not taking action, but then we really have to take a look at, are we facilitating and delivering that program in a way that is conducive to how adults learn? Oh, by the way, not every adult learns in the same way or processes in the same way. And you've got to be skilled at that. You also have to have a desire to become skilled at that. It completely changes how you build out and structure and deliver your whole entire program. That will eliminate a lot of the frustration that we're all at times experiencing with our clients in our groups.
Yeah, I want to add to that because, you know, when you're taking someone's money in the delivery of a promise, you know, you're having a vested interest in the success of your clients and getting through that program. And of course, you want great testimonials and you want people to get the result. So you have the stories to tell to get new clients into the program. And if someone isn't doing well, you tend to like, well, let's book a call. Let me help you. I'll work through it with you. You tend to over deliver and overextend. Mm-hmm. And so how, you know, I'm sure all our listeners are on the edge of their seats right now saying, okay, Megan, what's the secret sauce? You know, how do we handle adult learners differently? And how do we ensure that people get the results that we're promising without over delivering or beating ourselves up or feeling like we failed?
Yeah, there's lots of different things. If I were going to pick a few that I think, especially for people who have dabbled in groups or they have a group right now, you know, one aspect that wasn't in the classroom when we were growing up, and this certainly was barely in a college class. I think, you know, I got a business degree. So by the time I became a junior and senior, we were doing more group work because we had lots of group projects and presentations to do. But we still weren't doing that inside the classroom, really. But when we're growing up inside the classroom, the older we get, the less we're actually interacting with our peers and learning from our peers inside the classroom and really coming up with our own creative, innovative, imaginative ideas. And one of the things that really supports an adult to show up, engage, be an active participant, and then implement your whatever you're teaching, implementing your curriculum, it sounds a little counterintuitive, but you really do want to strive to create a culture of community. Now, here's what I want to say about that, because this was such a huge learning for me with adults in my own groups. And I kind of had this idea in my mind that, well, they're already in a group together. We have this Facebook group where they're interacting with each other, or they can. We're showing up on Zoom once, twice, sometimes three times a week, depending on how many calls you have in your group. We're seeing each other every single week. I'm talking, they're asking questions. Voila, you have community. And I had an experience with one of my mastermind groups. This was a while ago. And we were having a virtual retreat. And I put them in breakout rooms to have a discussion about something. And when they came back, and they were in there for about 45 minutes, it was a long breakout room. When they came back, they were quite emotional. And you don't often see that a whole lot. I'm a business coach. Mm-hmm. That doesn't always, crying doesn't always happen. Not often. And I'm like, oh no, my agenda has gone out the window.
What happened?
My agenda is gone. And they started sharing, we don't know each other. We have been in this program. We've been showing up every week. We are on Zoom. We're in this group. We see each other. We even have like a group Voxer, but we don't actually have a connection with each other. And what they realized, and what I realized, I don't think they realized it. I think they were hoping, wishing, craving it. And they don't, you know, your clients aren't necessarily just going to come and say, hey, you don't know what you're doing. You should implement this. A lot of people aren't going to do that. What I picked up on was, wow, they are actually going to get more out of this experience from the group more so than me. And that's a hard pill to swallow, because lots of times, you know, we're kind of getting in our own way and it's all about me and my great teaching and how smart I am, how much I know,
expert,
how much I'm delivering to you. And sometimes we as group leaders can have a tendency to overcompensate with our, because of our own insecurities. And that's what was happening with me. It was, you know, I had my own insecurities. And so I was kind of over delivering with like, I've got to teach all this stuff and I have to give them all these great things. But people, your group coaching clients are actually getting just as much, if not more, because you are facilitating ways for the group clients to get together and have peer-to-peer leadership and peer-to-peer learning. Because what that does is it builds greater levels of trust, love, and respect between you and them, but also between each of your clients. And we are not the only ones who can deliver to our clients. We are not the only ones who can help our clients have great transformation. Your own clients inside the program could actually do that more than you could. And you know what I really noticed is I was actually taking away that opportunity. I was taking it away from them to learn from someone else. So that is one of the absolute best ways. And you want to incorporate it all throughout your program to increase the value without you overworking and doing the heavy lifting. But that's going to lend itself to increased engagement, increased retention, increased results for your clients.
That's a huge insight. And I just want to highlight it for everyone here that that's, you know, that's not typical run of the mill, you know, here's how to have a great group program. That was incredible insight that Megan just shared with us. And that it's a true thing that the pressure is real, that you feel like you have to keep teaching and delivering and how do I bring people to the next level? Because you feel like they're all panting and sitting there waiting for you to, okay, tell me something new. Tell me what's next. Tell me how to get to the next level. Can you share a little bit of detail about how you use that community experience to deliver that exceptional result? How did you incorporate that into your groups?
Yeah, that's a really great question. So, you know, I still need to remind myself going into my own group calls about the most optimal way to facilitate whatever that particular call's outcome is. You know, I think we talk a lot about what's the outcome of the program itself. What's the promise of the program? And that's an extremely important conversation to be having for so many reasons. And I think what we have a tendency to forget because you just start getting on autopilot and automatic. Got another call this week. Got to show up for my call. What am I teaching? But you want to pause. You want to pause and prepare, which requires time. And it requires you carving out that time in your calendar to think through, okay, based on the ultimate promise of our program, based on where we are currently at in the program and who's in it, and what part of the curriculum I'm delivering today. What is the outcome of today's call? What's the intention of today's lesson or step or whatever you call it? And it's like asking yourself a set of questions. How do I want my clients to think about this subject matter? Because you are teaching them something new. You are attempting to equip them with some new skills, and you're probably going to ask them to take some new action that they have not taken before to yield the result that they desire. So right out of the gate, it's like we know ourselves, they're going to have all sorts of insecurities. They're going to have all sorts of like ways that they already pre-think about it. They're going to have all sorts of perceptions, fears, doubts, worries. Like that's a given. We know that's going to happen. So it's thinking, how do I want my clients to think about this? How do I want them to, what do I want that action to look like when they go do this? How do I want them to feel? How do I want my clients to feel? And if our clients see us as the savior, as the expert, and we're just sitting there teaching and delivering, and they're receiving and taking notes, and then we expect them to be able to go do it, there's so many missing parts and pieces to that. What if we could create an environment where it was encouraging them to explore? It was encouraging them to activate greater depths of their own creativity. What if we put them in a position where we could activate their imagination? Well, let me tell you, as the teacher, you cannot do that through just teaching your content, right? So what's really going to have that client explore what they're capable of and what's possible is to create that environment, which is the easiest way to do it virtually is put them in breakout rooms, and you teach what little you need to teach, and you kind of let them go practice it with each other. Give them a prompt, give them the instruction that they need to have the conversation or have the act, whatever you're asking them to do. Let them go talk about it, right? You know what you know. As a teacher, you know what you know. You also know what you don't know. Your clients know what they know. They know what they don't know. And if it's just teaching to the group, it's still almost like I'm just learning from myself and the coach. That's it. Well, what about all these other people sitting here? When you put them in a group together, now you've got 3, 4, 5, 6 other minds, 6 other people's experiences, what's working for them, what's not. They can prompt each other with questions. I mean, you just see creativity, imagination, influence explode out of people. Plus, you're giving them the opportunity to go ahead and sort of practice in a really safe environment before you just like send them out to the big bad world where they already have all these insecurities. So you're also, without you having to be the deliverer of equipping them with the feelings and the thoughts and the beliefs and the skills and the knowledge, you are letting the group do that for each other. Now the heavy lifting is off of your shoulders. Now they're not seeing you as a savior. Now they're seeing your program and you as highly valuable, and it's not actually directly coming from you. It's coming from the experience that you're providing them, and now you're getting exactly what you want: engagement, participation, action, which is going to yield the results.
Exactly. And, you know, it's the original definition of a mastermind. I mean, if it's you and your mind on a program or problem or challenge, then it's only your mind applied to it, where the definition of a mastermind is that the value of all minds applied to a single problem creates a masterful solution that no single mind would have created on their own. So I think it's brilliant that you brought that up, because there's so many people out there who call their programs masterminds, and there's actually no masterminding in the program whatsoever.
Yeah. You know, we're talking about group programs. I incorporate those elements in my group, and you don't have to send your group coaching clients into a breakout room for 45 minutes. You can for 5. Yeah. You can for 5 minutes and then bring them back in. Plus, you know, the other thing that that's creating is it creates, you know, it just makes the call more dynamic. You know, so many of us are sitting at our computers, sitting in our chairs. We're on so many Zoom calls. Who wants to sit there and listen to you just teach and talk for an hour or an hour and a half? So you're really keeping the energy moving. And that's incredibly important for adults as well.
I love that. I mean, you're teaching me, Megan. I learned so much from this. I know you also do retreats, in-person retreats. And I imagine there's that kind of component too, because I, from my own experience, when I bring clients on retreat together, it's when they really get to know each other and those relationships get formed and cemented. So before we close, tell us a little bit about your retreat experiences as well.
Yeah, I've run about 20 retreats in the last 5 years in person. And I love to incorporate a lot of different elements. You know, I really do think through, again, what's the end outcome of this retreat? What's the theme? And what type of environment is going to lend itself to that outcome being achieved? And so, you know, environment is really important for me. So nature is a really critical part of it for the way I run retreats. So I always pick a place where we have access to nature. I always incorporate excursions, and I typically do excursions in the middle. So if I have a 3-day retreat, it would be on day 2. And the excursions are typically things that are fun, but they're also designed to get people out of their comfort zone. And it's designed to create a team atmosphere among your clients. Because again, you always want to be thinking, how can I help the clients in the group become a team themselves? How can I create that? Well, it's hard to be the one that's creating that. So you must put them in an environment where they're doing that themselves. So again, you're more of the facilitator. So nature, excursions are really important. I know I'm kind of bouncing around with the retreats. The other piece that's really critical is that you are not deciding what the outcome is going to be for each of the clients attending the retreat. I always start every retreat by letting them say what their intention or desired outcome is. Once I know that, that then also helps inform me on what the actual training or exercises or activities are going to be. Now, you might be thinking, if you're hearing this, you don't find that out until they're literally sitting in the room. Yeah, I don't. But when you're running a retreat, you already know what your skill set is. You know what your bag of activities and exercises are. So when you're really skilled at your craft, you already have access to that. So you whip it out when you need to. Now, I go into retreats with a loose agenda of what I think is going to work. Then when I hear their intentions, I'm able to kind of shape it and be flexible as I go. The other thing to really pay attention to when you're running a retreat is you want to practice. Now, you're not going to be like amazing at this your first few retreats, but at an in-person retreat, you are navigating and dancing between the roles of teacher, leader, facilitator, coach, and do not forget, friend. That's a really important one. And that was a big lesson for me recently. I took a group of people on a retreat to Mexico in January. And it was probably one of the best retreats. It was probably the best retreat I've ever facilitated. Takes a while to get really good at them. And some of the feedback I got there while we were there was that what made that retreat so special was we got to meet the friend in you. And when they get to meet the friend in you, that's when you know you're being, to the degree you need to be, vulnerable. Because the leader and the facilitator of the retreat has to be vulnerable first. Your clients at the retreat have to witness that. When they witness that, it allows them to open themselves up. And that's really you playing the role of friend. Now, we can have a whole conversation about friend is not like you're my best buddy, but they see that side of you. And it's a different side of you, not just like you're the head leader. And that's a really important piece, the navigating between those roles and knowing that you're playing all of those roles. And you have to know when to switch. You have to be able to read the room so that you're switching from one to the other, but your clients can't tell. They don't know what you're doing. You know what you're doing.
Megan, oh my God, there are so many gems in this conversation. I hope everyone was taking notes because this was a non-standard conversation about how to launch a group program. You really dived into the nuances of how to keep people engaged, how to pull yourself out of the equation, and how to navigate who you're being in these group experiences. And that's been hugely valuable. And I know that we could continue for hours in having this conversation, but the best thing we can do is give our listeners a way to keep in touch with you and to follow you and maybe get involved in some of your programs going forward. So what is the best way for people to get in touch?
Yeah, I would say if you're listening to this podcast, you're probably a podcast listener. So you can go subscribe and follow the Built to Last podcast. That's my show. And once you're there, all my links are there. And I'll just share my website is meganjohnsonhuber.com. But a great go-to place is the podcast.
Yeah, it's been great to follow you there as well. And Megan, thank you so much for joining us on Life After Corporate today and sharing about how to build leverage. And it seems like true joy in your business. It's, you really shine when you talk about your group programs, how you care about your clients, and how you're so tuned in to their specific needs. So thank you so much for sharing with us today.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Yeah, that's it for now, my friends. Stay tuned for another episode of Life After Corporate next week, and we'll see you real soon. Take care.
Thanks for listening, my friend. If you enjoyed this show, please head over to iTunes and subscribe and leave us a review. And be sure to hop over to the Life After Corporate Facebook group and join other growing entrepreneurs to get weekly tips on how to create more money and meaning doing work you love.